Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, all righty. Thank you, Douglas. A beautiful job as always. And just welcome to Breaking the Silence. And we have an awesome show tonight. And I just appreciate so much you taking the time out of your busy schedule to just spend a few moments with us. And I'm looking forward to this evening. And before we get into what we have going on tonight, we're just enjoying a beautiful fall evening here in the most beautiful city in the country, Houston, Texas. And we're just sitting back and enjoying the night. And we have some awesome guests that's coming up in the future. I want to let you know about before we get into our guest tonight. But I automatically want you to grab a pencil, grab a piece of paper, write this number down, because you may want to call in tonight. This is going to be good. We have the whole hour with this guest, and we're just going to kind of pour a cup of coffee or diet soda and sit back and just talk. And we want you to join in on that conversation this evening. So as Doug said, that number is 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008, and we would love to have you call and comment or just ask a question. Next week, right here, we have a guest called, name is Lisa Floyd, and she is a licensed mental health counselor associate, and she is going to be talking about the trauma of adoption, and then also an unbelievable process called brain spotting, and we're also going to talk about complex trauma. And she's got some awesome information that she's going to share with us. That'll be next Sunday night. And 2 weeks from tonight, if you would, just reach over and grab your seatbelt and tighten it a little bit right now. We have one of my heroes in life, Jane Stevens. She is the founder and publisher of ACEs Connection. And that is something that has changed my life, and I have met so many wonderful people on that. And the founder of that organization is going to be with us 2 weeks from tonight, Jane Stevens. And I know you will want to be here for that and not miss it. But tonight, and this is going to be so interesting, I love how this works. Tonight we have an awesome guest with us, Dr. C. F. Martin. And Dr. Martin, I will talk about when we get her actually punched in here on the line, how we met, very unusual, is a licensed clinical psychologist who specializes in the treatment of depression, grief, panic, and other anxiety disorders. I tell you what, I need your number, Dr. Martin, just to talk offline. In addition to believing in the power of psychotherapy, she is also a strong believer in the healing powers of compassion, faith, and the ancient wisdom from the scriptures. She's married, has two children, and she lives with her family in the beautiful city of Phoenix, Arizona. And she has written a book that we're going to talk about tonight and literally, hopefully, get through majority of the points in her book. I just finished it this afternoon, and the book is called, ready for this? Write this down, Thou Shall Be Happy. It's her first book on the market, and we'll let you know you can get it right now. And the book is designed to inspire psychological perspective on the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments is in Exodus, in our Bibles. She looks at this in an awesome new way. And Dr. Martin, just welcome tonight to Breaking the Silence. I want you to just hop on in. And I want to find out so much about you, so much about how you've done this book. And honestly, I thoroughly enjoyed page one all the way to the last page of this book. And thank you for writing it. So just welcome to Breaking the Silence, Dr. C.F. Martin. Are you with us?
All right, yes. Oh, I'm with you. Thank you so much for having me tonight, truly. And I just would just like to say, I also listened to y'all last week, and it was just so touching hearing you and your sons talking. It was just, it was a really moving moment, and it was really great to hear you guys talk about your survival through trauma as well.
That was a great night. And they, when we got off, they said, oh, can we do it again? They're ready to jump back in and do another show. And we had such great response from that. So I appreciate you mentioning that. Dr. Martin, let's talk a little bit. Well, you were out in Newport Beach, California at the same conference that I was at a few weeks ago. And
yes, sir.
How we met, nothing happens by chance. But we were in a conference together, and I was talking on ACEs and toxic stress. And I guess you were in that room listening to that. And I mentioned several times that I had to run outside to the driveway and jump in a car and get to LAX airport so I could get back to Houston to do another conference here. And we literally bumped into each other in the driveway. Is that not awesome how paths cross like that? And we got a chance to talk a little bit. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, it is so crazy and miraculous how this opportunity happened for me and to meet you and to be here tonight. Whoever knew? Something I really connected with your presentation was as a therapist, I do ACEs almost every day.
Wow.
Almost every day, whenever I'm meeting a person with trauma, I pull out my ACEs and be like, let's see what your score is. I think it's a great avenue of finding, hoping to find a little bit of compassion for the person on their healing journey, which is, of course, going to be a big, big aid in healing, is trying to find compassion for ourselves. And I think ACEs does a really great job at doing that. So super interested in the ACEs. But what I really appreciated was your little comments here and there about how the faith really helped you through your hard times.
Yeah.
I'm a believer. I believe in the power of faith. And to hear, you know, someone like you up there on stage in front of everybody talking so openly about it, it was just a really touching moment. And so I really appreciated that.
Well, I appreciate that you mentioned that, because sometimes I have a green light in my spirit to share. And sometimes, you know, when you're in front of the professionals, in the social workers and the therapist and the psychologist, the psychiatrist, you kind of go, okay, I better not open that can of worms. It may backfire on me. But that was a unique session that afternoon, and we just kind of – I spoke from the heart. And so we got a chance to talk about faith a little bit. And I always jump on that when the opportunity arises. And when we were talking in the parking lot that afternoon, and you mentioned this book, and I got online and looked at it and then talked to you a little bit after. This is absolutely, Dr. Number one, written in the exact way I love a book to be written in. Very clear cut. There's a little coping secret in every chapter. There's ways to use what you learned in that chapter, things that you can apply immediately. And just overall, it was written beautifully. How long did it take you, doctor, to write this book, Thou Shall Be Happy?
I would say it took me about two and a half years.
Wow.
And
the way you got this wisdom was literally on an airplane on a Southwestern airline?
Well,
tell me about that.
That's where the inspiration came. But the truth was, so I wanted to get my daughter baptized. And so the church said, of course, but you need to go to a baptism class. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I was kind of in a mood because I was like, I've been raised in the Catholic Church. Like, I've been to Catholic schools my whole life. Like, I know what's going on. I was totally in a bad mood. And so, but I went because, you know, I'm a good follower. And so I went, and it's Saturday morning. You know, I haven't had my coffee yet. I'm sitting there in this classroom, and the preacher is up there, and his first question was, all right, guys, can anybody tell me what the original sin was? And almost like a church and singing choir in unison, we're all like, stealing the tree from the apple. And he was like, that's incorrect. And he said, the true original sin was selfishness. Mm. And I was like, that's interesting. I haven't had my coffee yet, but that's interesting. And then, so I went on with the class when I got my certificate. And the next week, I had to go to a baby shower for one of my friends, actually in Austin. And so I'm sitting there on this plane, staring out at the clouds. And I'm like, if the first original sin was selfishness and not stealing, how would that affect the Ten Commandments? And so I pulled out my cocktail napkin and I turned it over and I wrote out the Ten Commandments. And I was like, all right, if seven isn't really stealing, it's truly about selfishness, then I guess the curative experience for selfishness would be selflessness.
Mm.
And then I literally just made the skeleton of my book on the back of this napkin and just tried to find research behind how the coping skills that I pulled from each one, if there was any truth to it. And, you know, there was. There really, really was for all of it. And so it was just kind of like a passion project between work and two kids. I was writing this in my, you know, free time, and it just kind of developed into this.
Wow. And the way this all falls in into place, it is beautiful. How I never thought of the Ten Commandments in this way. Now, one thing in your practice, doctor, do you have a faith-based practice, or is it more clinical? Tell me about your practice a little bit. Then we're going to get inside of the faith issue. How is it religious at all, or is it just normal?
No, not at all. Not at all. And so when somebody shares, or when a patient shares with me that they are, if they do follow Christianity, or even some way follow the Ten Commandments, you know, I mean, research is so supports having some sort of faith in terms of a mental health, but whenever I can, I do try to pull this. But otherwise, you know, as you know, it's a very touchy subject, and I don't want to be, you know, accused of pushing on anything. But no, right. my practice is definitely very traditional, you know, CBT-oriented type practice. Evidence-based, you know the drill.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Okay, so this comes to you, and you start looking at each commandment in each of these chapters, and you find something that ties in to believing in something or doing something that aligns itself with what that Ten Commandment could possibly mean in the psychological world, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And that's why I decided to call it Thou Shall Be Happy. Because at least growing up in the church, you know, the Ten Commandments are all about rules, right? You don't do this, don't do this. And so as a therapist, I was looking at it not from, you know, what shouldn't we do, but what is the true heart of each commandment? So the action is to, you know, not steal, not have an affair, you know, not to lie. But what's at the heart of it? What are we supposed to do to not only live a civilized life and to have a civilized society, but how maybe these Ten Commandments are more than just rules of a society or what we should or should not do. But maybe, just maybe, these commandments were given to us as our yellow brick road to living a happy, peaceful, fulfilling life. Maybe.
Well, you sure make a case for it. I grant you that. On a scale of 1 to 10, you went up to 11 or 12 on sure convincing me that there's more depth in what we read as just words on a page and do's and don'ts. You know, love your Lord, mm-hmm. your God with all your heart. Yeah. And then, you know, then it turns into the do nots. And have you ever thought about it this way, that any time that you dissect truth, truth still prevails. Truth is still there.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
So if we take these and find a deeper meaning in it, this is truth. I mean, this is just biblical truth that can be applied to our lives. And I learned some wonderful things. And the way you have the references, the way you have the experts' opinions back there to back it up was just awesome. So when you've looked at, let's just kind of start going through these. When you look at the first one, I am the Lord your God, you will have no other gods before me, number one. Tell me how you came up with that first secret.
Well, this one, most of these actually came pretty quickly to me. There is one that was kind of elusive for a while, but I finally pulled out something that I thought was really meaningful. For the first one, though, I really don't... Well, okay, to back it up, you know, the first commandment really had to be this commandment, in my opinion.
Yes.
You know, we were battling against polytheism at the time, and we needed to really just dismiss all of that, because if there are any other gods, then the Ten Commandments wouldn't matter. So we needed to take care of that first. However, it's more than just about our God or his God or your God, but belief is at the core of it. Yes, believe in God, but believe in something. Believe in, have a purpose every day. Make your life meaningful. And that's what belief and faith can do for us. You know, whether it's, you know, Jesus Christ or Allah or going into more Eastern religions, having faith in the universe, faith in God, it'll do you good. It will do you good if you believe.
Now, I was...
Not...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go on. Oh, I was just going to say, like, I think also in terms of anxiety management, everybody's looking at facts, right? We've never lived in an era where we had more information than we've ever had. But for some reason, one in three Americans suffers from an anxiety disorder. What is it? What's the fact? What does this say? What is this going to do? I don't know, but I believe it's going to be okay. Yeah. I believe in a God that's going to make it okay. And I'm going to go to bed asleep and sleep well with faith more than facts.
So I was really taken back a little bit when I was reading this first chapter, because I love getting into new books and trying to figure out, okay, where are you coming from? How are you going to design this and lay this roadmap out? And, you know, what journey are you going to take me on? And then when I turned the page on this one, it went into narcissist.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it's like, okay, wait, help me with that. You got to believe. And it's about belief. And then you turn the corner on that and go, wow, now that was interesting. And I love the way you brought that in. Can you share with the listeners what you mean by, you know, how you took that concept?
Oh, absolutely. So I am definitely a Greek mythology nerd. It was one of my favorite things to read as a child. But just to refresh everybody's memories, Narcissus was this mythical Grecian back in the day who fell in love with his reflection in a lake and ended up dying there because he starved to death, because he never got up again, because he just wanted to look at himself. He was worshiping himself.
Mm.
And look where that led him. A life lived only for ourselves, worshiping ourselves, is not a way of living a happy life. He needed to believe in something greater than himself.
Yeah, then we're going to, I'm going to get out my shovel here. We're going to take our first break, but I want to dig into this because this has to go back to our purpose, the reason we're here, the reason things happen to us, what we have been given to take to the world. We are all wired in a certain way. And when you look at this, I think some of these disorders that come into place is because we're too busy looking inside instead of outside, and to believe in something is so powerful. So we're going to come back and dig a little bit deeper into that, and want to make sure that you know you can call in at 888-627-6008, and we'll be back in about a minute and 9 seconds. So call in right now, breaking the silence.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Thank you, Douglas. I appreciate that. We are being honored tonight just to sit back and talk and enjoy visiting with Dr. C.F. Martin, and she has written an awesome book that I highly recommend. Each of you pick it up right now, Thou Shall Be Happy. And we're talking about the Ten Commandments and how there's coping skills possibly inside, and you call them kind of secrets or keys type of thing of how we can be happy with these commandments if you take kind of your different view of these, which is wonderful. Looking at this number one and the narcissist. So as this mythology gentleman looked into the water and saw his reflection, they literally have what, a disorder named after this?
Yes.
And tell me about that disorder, doctor.
Absolutely. You know, I know most people think everybody's ex-boyfriends are narcissists, but it's less common in terms of statistics, at least in statistics. Not every ex-boyfriend or bad boss has a narcissistic personality disorder. It is, you know, in the smaller percentages. Last time I checked, I think it's been like somewhere between like 3 or 4% of the population. Very, very small. However, individuals with narcissistic personality disorder have a lot of impairments. I know it might sound awesome, like, wow, I'm a narcissist and I really like myself. But the truth is, if it wasn't bad or sad, it wouldn't be considered a disorder. So narcissists are actually impaired, have really hard lives in multiple different areas. Narcissists tend to have poor identity development. They don't really know who they are, primarily because they don't know what they want. And so they can't really hanker down onto something. That's another reason why they have poor abilities for self-directed behavior. They also have really poor abilities for empathy, as well as obviously intimacy problems. And so in terms of these people growing up, getting a happy job and having a partner who loves them, very uncommon because no one's willing to stay with them because they just tend to be very superficial and not close and can't really connect with others. So it's very sad.
Does the first commandment and the secret that you found in that, as you call it in this chapter, does that help the narcissist with their issue? Would that be one of the skills? Because your coping skill here, secret on this one, is belief. So would that be one thing that you could, that would solve that problem or be a big help for someone that has that disorder?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. I think narcissists suffer so much, as you were talking about before the break. Narcissists suffer so much because their eyes are almost turned inward. What am I doing? What am I going to do? How is this going to help me? And so with belief in a higher power, a belief in the universe, a belief in something outside of themselves would certainly be a clinically relevant activity for this person to do.
Wow. So since the beginning of time, if your Catholic priest enlightened you with that first original sin was selfishness, that all falls into place with this too, right? Because that's all right there. If they were looking beyond themselves, they wouldn't have the pride that would have taken the bait of what Satan was throwing out at him. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, take the fruit. If you get this, you're going to become like him, and you'll have all knowledge. And yeah, it's like, hey, this will help me.
Exactly.
And, you know, I think, and I always look for free counseling when I'm on the radio show for myself. I think in the last year or two, since I've written the book and kind of came out with all the unbelievable stuff that happened in my life, when I start taking the focus off of me and put it on other people, my life has turned around. My life is completely different. And this first chapter was really, really good. I enjoyed that.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Okay. And that's first secret coping skill for the first of the Ten Commandments is to simply
believe in something. Believe in something.
Absolutely. Okay.
You can pick it, but just believe in something. Believe in something greater than you.
Yeah. And I like it, even though, you know, the old, you know, you're of the Catholic faith and I'm the old Baptist, you know. But I like the book. In the olden days, I probably would have said, now wait. But I like the book because anybody of any faith could pick this up and apply it to their life. So you're not saying, hey, this is the way you have to believe. You have to be a Methodist. You have to be this. You have to do that. You have to go through the Catholic Church and their ritual. No, every chapter makes it clear whatever belief system that you're in, you can draw some truth out of this and change your life.
Well, thank you for saying that, because that was definitely what I was going for. I was actually was even so one reason I even went with you know, the Catholic version, the St. Augustine version of the Ten Commandments, was just because it's what I knew, it's what I grew up with, and I was like, oh, well, maybe I should make it, you know, an extra chapter to go with the, you know, the Protestant Second Commandment of how it was just worded. And I was just talking to some other people who have written books, and they're like, it's fine. Like, you know, don't overthink it. It's not offensive. It's not, you know, saying the Catholic way is better. It's just, you know, it's my truth. And I try to make it as global and universal as possible. So I'm glad it came off that way.
Well, it did in a beautiful way. And I have learned over the years, I guess the older I get, the more understanding I become, but I like to run everything through that, I call it the coffee filter. If it goes through the grounds and through the filter and into the pot, I'm going to drink it. I'm not going to go back into the pull the filter out and take a bite or two of the grounds. I throw that stuff away. That's the way I look at all these books from all these authors that have great truth and wisdom in it. If it doesn't apply to me, I'm not going to throw the book away. I'm just going to say, okay, somebody else could get something out of that, but I got so much truth out of this just for me. So it applied to me in a great way.
Awesome.
Okay, so let's switch now to the second commandment. I am the Lord your God, thou shalt not take my name in vain. Okay, so we're not taking the name of God in vain. What's the secret we're supposed to grab out of that one?
All right, so this is one of my my personal favorites. I think I talk about this one daily in my practice. So the commandment is saying don't take the Lord's name in vain. Don't swear and say God and all of that stuff. The secret coping skill that I got out of that, though, was general kind language for yourself and with your communication with others. Always be kind. I was really inspired by Proverbs 18:21. Says, life and death are in the power of the tongue.
Wow.
And boy, is this true. It is so true. The words we use when we're talking to others or when we're talking about ourselves, when we're texting it, when we're on Facebook writing about it, it is either going to set us up for feeling great or we're going to set ourselves up for feeling miserable. We have this power. God knew it, and we needed to figure that out a long time ago. But kind language is one of the best, secret coping skills that we can do today, moving forward for forever. I have a lot to say about this one.
Yeah, and this is good, and we don't have to cover all 10 of these tonight. We can just, go as far as we can. But, the book of James talks about the tongue in a very powerful way. That tongue has, I think it mentions three different powers. The power to destroy, like a fire. A power to, I believe, direct, like a rudder on the back of a ship. And a power to delight, like the fountain, a refreshing fountain. And that power of our words, and especially in the field that we're in, Doctor, when you see children or people, the aftermath of what happened to them as children, what the parent says and what we say to each other makes a major difference.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. James was right, and it's as right today as it was back then.
Yeah. So what other truths do you have out of this one?
Instantly. Oh, yeah. So some things that I talk about instantly with patients is, like I think most therapists do, we try to recognize, that was a really harsh thing you just said about yourself. Like, you're an idiot because you didn't know the future. But when we keep saying things like, I'm such an idiot, I'm such a loser, these globalized terms, or maybe something, singular. Like, yeah, you sped once and you got a ticket. But, like, calling yourself a horrible driver, like, that's inaccurate, and you're just hurting yourself. I know it sounds old-fashioned, but, just teaching people how to speak kind to themselves is a huge, huge, hugely powerful coping skill, and it's non-medicated, and it's a great, simple way of becoming kinder and thus happier in your own life, all by just knowing how to change your words and your communication with yourself.
When you are in therapy and you have a client in front of you, and you notice and start maybe jotting down every time they knock themselves, every time they talk down to themselves or call themselves things, does that ever play into the way you respond back to them and treat them as far as that scripture of what is ever in your heart, whatever comes out of your mouth is what is inside of your heart? Does that give you insight to where they are in the mental health world?
Oh, yeah. So I definitely jot it down, take a note of their inner narrative. And it's like, wow, the person I see in front of me is not the person they see. and, you know, just trying to help them augment their reality just a little bit through language. You know, I'm not a brain surgeon. I can't give them any sort of drugs. I'm not qualified for that. But the most that I can do is to try to knock out this evil propaganda that's going on in their minds. And I'll just ask them, hey, you know what? I know it might not feel real when you say this, but how about calling yourself good? You know, how about at least going neutral? You know, just take out the word stupid. I'm a person, not a stupid person. You know, let's start there. Let's start, you know, the harm reduction way of just making that evil propaganda in your mind that's telling yourself that you're bad or you should keep drinking or, you know, you should stay with this person because you're no good. All of that's just evil propaganda, and it's got to stop. And one of the greatest, easiest ways is to just challenge that propaganda, challenge those judgmental words, seeing if there's any truth in it. Where did it come from? Was this your dad? Was this your teacher? Like, where did these words pop into your mind and stick that are haunting you to this day? Because it's not true. And so let's work on that.
Yeah, and help me, okay? I'm on your couch, mm-hmm. and I'm one of your patients, and one of my issues that I still deal with daily, and I think I mentioned it probably at the conference because I usually mention this every time I speak, that I still have very low self-esteem. I still look in the mm-hmm. mirror, and I don't like what mm-hmm. I see, and I'm sure it's because I've been told for years, all through my childhood, that I was nothing, wouldn't amount to anything. And how can words change that? If I was one of your patients, what would you recommend that I can pull out of maybe this chapter in how to use these skills to help me get past that in my own life, let alone the thousands of listeners that are listening right now?
Yeah, you know, these hauntings, as I call them, are so common. You know, they could have been 5 years ago or 40 years ago, and we're still haunted by the mean, cruel words that people have called us. And it's a slow move. It's like trying to get, you know, a huge ship that's crossing over the ocean to turn around. It's going to take a big slow down and some wide angles to get that ship turned around. But every day, telling yourself something kind. Every day telling yourself something that you did well. And I would also encourage people and teach people to challenge. Go ahead and challenge their thoughts. Because you know what? Thoughts are going to pop up. You know, they just seemingly just pop up. And go ahead and challenge it. You know, how true is that? You know, I was told long ago that I'm not going to amount to, you know, a hill of beans. Am I a hill of beans? I mean, I guess it's all judgmental, but I mean, you know, comparatively, am I pretty successful or smart or attractive or whatever it is that we're struggling with? You know, is there any truth to it, or is it just a haunting that won't go away? And let's use kind language to be even just fact-finding.
So you had a couple paragraphs in this chapter on somebody that cuts you off on the highway.
Yes.
And the words that come out of your mouth when that happens, does that reveal something deeper inside of who we are?
You know, I think it does. Not in a bad way, though. Mm-hmm. Coming from a person that works a lot with trauma, you know, I think our fight or flight system is an yes. amazing system. It's incredible what the body can do. So when we're driving along the highway and somebody cuts us off, it's a threat to our survival, you know, at least for that second where maybe we thought it was a close call or, you know, maybe we had to swerve a little. You know, our body is smart and we want to survive. And so it's going to click in. Fear, anger, you know, they kind of come like twins into the forefront. And so for a lot of us, especially if we had to live in LA for a while, can have this experience of fear and anger that's being promoted by our sympathetic nervous system. It is natural. And so we have these tendencies to be, you know, for lack of better terms, vicious. That guy is a jerk. That guy was an idiot. That guy must be blind. These huge global names for this stranger. None of it's true. I don't know this guy from Adam. Like, I've never seen this guy who just cut me off. But yet I am now attributing all of these characteristics to this poor person. And so in terms of kind language for day-to-day stuff like that, it's important to reflect, again, challenging, you know, not yelling at ourselves, it's just challenging, hey, is there any truth in that? Because the truth is, the truth doesn't really matter. Whether that guy, because we're not going to find out. We're not going to know whether that guy cut us off because we're in a white car or because we were driving too slow. We're never going to know.
Yeah.
So why burden ourselves with this evil fantasy that this guy's a jerk and he did it on purpose because I'm a woman or because I'm this or he saw that I have this bumper sticker. This is why. You don't know that.
Yeah.
And so to alleviate yourself from that anger, I would recommend go ahead, since you're not going to know the truth, go ahead and make up your own words with kind language. You know what? Maybe that guy's on his way to a hospital.
Yeah.
For himself or for a family member. You know, maybe he just didn't see me. Maybe he's visiting out of town. You know, maybe he does suffer from an eye problem. I mean, how horrible, how scary would that be? To suffer from, you know, vision problems, and finding that compassionate voice for that stranger versus the angry voice, that'll do you a lot more service than staying angry and spreading hatred through your own body. And that's
good
how kind language can serve us.
Good wisdom, Dr. Martin. I tell you what, we're going to take our last break, and then when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about ants. On this commandment, and then I want to kind of get personal with you about your background a little bit and how you came into this profession, and if there was something in your life that caused you to want to help other people. I always like trying to find that out too. Make sure if you want to, you can call in at 888-627-6008, and Douglas will get us back in about a minute or so. And thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence. We have one more segment, so hang with us.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
We have Dr. C.F. Martin with us this evening, and she has written an awesome book, Thou Shall Be Happy. My recommendation, if anybody follows what I recommend, is get on Amazon right now, because Dr. Martin, you can pick it up at Amazon right now. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, so type in Thou Shall Be Happy, Dr. C.F. Martin, and go ahead and order a copy or two. We're getting ready to come into Christmas. This would be an awesome Christmas gift too. So pick it up, and I know you will enjoy it. And then when you're done reading it, and I don't know, Dr. Martin, if you had the same issues with me, it's so hard to get somebody to get back online and give a review. But I do want to let you know that in the next day or two, I will be reviewing your book right on Amazon so people can hear what I think about it, because it's very important. And as you go through this publishing world, every one of those reviews means a lot to us authors. So I recommend you not only buy the book, but get back on and review it for Dr. Martin. I'm sure she would appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much. Okay,
doctor, let's talk about ants while we finish up this.
All right.
What does ants mean in this second All commandment right. as you go into the coping skills?
Okay, so ants is a fun acronym that we therapists like to use for automatic negative thoughts. And so, you know, therapy can sometimes be a fun place where we can have bad jokes. And so we like to talk about ants so we can step on those ants to make our lives better. And kind language is a great way of eradicating your ants problem if you might have ants in your life or mine. And so, that being said, how to avoid those automatic negative thoughts? Because as I was mentioning earlier, thoughts do come up and, you know, make us feel bad.
Yeah.
So here's some, using kind language in our everyday life, one of my things, honestly, and this sounds simple, try to limit or stop any overexposure to harsh language, whether it's TV or in music, if you're, or your television shows or movies, whatever it is, if you hear a lot of negative language, it's going to come to your head more. You know, our brain doesn't have a separate category of language that I use for other people and language that I use myself. Like the brain is not compartmentalized that way. So if we have a tendency of using bad language with ourselves and with, or with others, it's all going to come out. So one of the best ways that we can reduce that probability of happening is let's just go ahead and try to, you know, lower, decrease the amount of harsh language that we have in our everyday life. You know, there's an old phrase, you know, hear no evil, speak no evil, see no evil. You know, if you don't want evil in your life, don't see it, don't talk about it, don't touch it, don't go near it. Harsh language is the same way, you know. And if it's a boss or someone in your life, you might have to have a courageous conversation about, you know, how you don't want to be talked to that way. That can, we can go into a little bit about boundaries in a different chapter. But in terms of kind language and stepping on those ants, go ahead, challenge those ants. Be like, hey, is that any bit true? You know, you look in the mirror and you say you're fat. Is there any truth to that? Like, what's your BMI? Like, what size clothes do you wear? Like, do you have to, are you so fat that you have to, you know, go to a different store to buy clothes? Like, is there truth to it? And if there is truth to it, let's do something about it. Rather than just letting those negative thoughts and feelings, because they're all connected, weigh on you and make you feel bad about yourself. So automatic negative thoughts can definitely be reduced by using kind language, kind, compassionate language, especially in our everyday lives.
So it can actually be eliminated, downsized, because I think the key to that ANTS acronym is automatic. It's the first thing that pops into your mind when something happens or you look at yourself or you make a mistake. I'm stupid. I knew I'd mess that up. I knew this was going to, you know, fail. And I'm so guilty of that. So, but we can replace that with, hey, we're still, everybody makes mistakes. We're human. It's called life. And there's always tomorrow, and you just kind of pump yourself back up and get more positive. So trash in, trash out, per se.
Yes, I like that.
Okay, so doctor, we got a few minutes, just a few minutes left. Is there anything that, before we may have enough time for the next favorite commandment we have left of the 10, but before we get to that, in your own personal life, I always like doing this when we have therapists and clinicians and social workers on the program. Anything personal in your life that caused you to want to sit on the other side of a room helping other people with their problems? Anything happened in your life that caused that?
Yeah. And, you know, as I do more of this, I think there are a lot of good clinicians that are brought to, you know, the other side of the couch from their own personal lives,
yeah.
you know. And so mine, with mine, I call myself, you know, the oops child, but my parents insist that's not true. But so I have a sibling that's a lot older than me.
Uh-huh.
And so when I was a little kid, she was already in her teens. And, you know, from my, you know, child view, I thought her life was perfect. She was beautiful. She had friends. You know, she had a car. You know, she was doing well in school. You know, it was, her life looked perfect. And me, I was just, you know, a little chubby, you know, a little like some, what grade was I in? I was probably like in fourth or fifth grade. You know, still like an awkward childhood phase. And I just looked at her and I was like, wow, her life just seems to have like everything. You know, why didn't I get that side of the gene pool type mentality? And anyways, I was playing one day and my mom said she was leaving. And I was like, where are you going? And she was like, I'm taking your sister to the doctor. And I was like, why? She's fine. Like, stay here. Hang out with me. And she's like, no, she has a doctor's appointment. I was like, why? Like, where's she going? Like, totally just being cushy. And she was like, well, she's not sick, but she just doesn't feel good about herself. And I was like, why? Her life is perfect. Like, just totally not getting what's going on here. And she was like, well, Catherine, you know, she really feels bad about herself. And I'm taking her to see a doctor to help her with that. And it was this really, truly world-changing experience for me because for the first time, it was this reality moment that my reality was so different from somebody else's. Like, and I know it sounds so simple, but at least to my 10, 11-year-old mind, to see that somebody else could have such a different world, it was just, it was mind-blowing to me. And so then I was like, wait, there's a profession that helps people feel better about themselves? Like,
uh-huh.
Wow, this is totally my, like, I'm super interested in this. And in the long term, she did suffer from a lot of anxiety and some eating disorder problems. And she went to a lot of good therapists. And I think she even went to a center for a while to get healthy. But yeah, you know, I was definitely thrown into the world, this world of mental health and addictions that went along with that for a while. And to see, like, there is pain and darkness, but there's also a world of help and healing as well. And I want to be on that side to help other people and their families, because families are also in this too, to help their loved ones. And so I definitely and feel pretty impassioned about what we do to help those people with all of those really, you know, horrible symptoms. You know, we could have a whole other show on to help right. them get stabilized and to feel good about themselves. Because, you know, going back to the Ten Commandments, you know, in my belief that there are these coping skills, that these commandments were meant for us to come here and lead this satisfying life and to help people fight those mental disorders, I think is a great calling for anybody who answers that call.
I do too. And I believe right now, and you can differ with me, and it wouldn't offend me at all, but I think in the next year or two, all the counselors and therapists and psychologists and things are going to have people lined up outside their office, because people are starting mm-hmm. to look at mental health as not something to shy away from. It's something to attack and get help with. We have kind of put mental health people in the closet for years. There's so many people that need help, and they just need to come out and get the help.
I know. I absolutely agree with that prediction.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an awesome work. And I can tell by just the brief time that we've talked tonight and meeting you in person that you must have an awesome client base and business that you talk with people, because you're good at what you do, I can tell. Doctor, now if people want to get in touch with you, or do you have a website, if they want to look at your blogs and things of that order, how would they find
yes.
out more about the book and things of that order?
Yeah, if anybody would like to go, my website is real simple. It's just www.drcfmartin.com. Please come stop by. The first three chapters of my book are actually up there. So if you like what you see, you can go on to Amazon, or you can just go on to Amazon now and check it out. But my contact information is also up there. If anybody wants to contact me, it's also just drcfmartin@gmail.com. And I would love to have any feedback or responses or reviews about this book, because it was certainly a passion project for me.
Well, you can tell, and it's beautifully written, and I just appreciate you sharing it with us tonight, and I hope that it goes to the top of the bestseller list right after the show ends this evening. Everybody's going to get on and buy it, and we'll get that moved up on the ladder as fast as we can. So thank you for being with us, Dr. Martin. It was a joy to get to meet you briefly, and it was a joy to get to talk to you this evening. And we'll have you back on Breaking the Silence
anytime.
Again. Thank you for being with us this evening.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much.
God
bless
you.
Have a great
night. We want to let you know that next week, right here on the show, will be Lisa Floyd, and she is a licensed mental health counselor associate, and she's going to be talking about the trauma of adoption, also brain spotting, and then we're going to be talking about complex trauma, and I may have another guest on that I actually met in California, too. I'm trying to get in touch with them to see if we can do a double show next week to get everybody on together. So we'll tell you about that a little bit later. And then 2 weeks from tonight will be Jane Stevens. And I'm looking forward to that so much. The founder and publisher of acesconnection.com. And Jane is just going to literally blow our socks off next week. As we close tonight, I want to let you know to take what Dr. Martin mentioned. Be kind to yourself. Say good things about yourself. Look in the mirror, and I promise to try this myself first thing in the morning. Look in the mirror, and you are a masterpiece. You are a creation, and you are special. And never forget that. No matter what you've gone through, no matter what you're into right now, no matter what you're going to go into tomorrow, as long as you have breath, I promise you, there is hope. Join us right here next week at 8 p.m. Central for another edition of Breaking the Silence. God bless. Have an awesome week.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.